The French writer Gide once opened a lecture by saying, I've said this before, but since no one paid attention, I'm going to repeat myself. And that theme of repetition carrying the message, and the idea that we don't get the message if it's not repeated over and over and over again, is not only common in lectures and conversations, not only common among couples, how many times have you heard your spouse's stories, but it is especially common in poetry. And it even has a special name. It's called parallelism. Parallelism is when two lines say the same thing, but not in the same words, not like the famous end of Robert Frost stopping by woods on snowy evenings, where he says, and I've got promises to keep, and I've got promises to keep. But rather, like the end, for example, of one of Shakespeare's most famous sonnets, so long as men can breathe or eyes can see. That's saying the same thing in two different ways. In other words, as long as there are people around. Or when, in Hausmann's poem, he writes, when I was 1 in 20, I heard a wise man say, give crowns and pounds and guineas, but not your heart away. Give pearls away and rubies, but keep your fancy free. Crowns and pounds and guineas, but not your heart away. Pearls away and rubies, but keep your fancy free. The same thing, different lines. It's English parallelism. In Hebrew, parallelism is all over the poetry of the Bible. But not only is it in the poetry of the Bible, but we Jews are so fond of repeating ourselves, without which, of course, rabbis could not give sermons every week, that we have learned how to do it in different words, without which congregations couldn't listen to rabbi sermons every week. The message may be the same, but in Jimmy Cagney's famous words, you have to serve it with a little relish. So at the Seder, we repeat ourselves. Kol dichvin yeteh v'yechu, kol dichrich yeteh v'yifsach. All who are hungry, come and eat. All who are needy, share the Passover with us. But the rabbis don't believe that parallelism says the same thing. They're convinced that because the words are holy words, no words are wasted. And therefore, when something is repeated, unlike in poetry, it must convey something significantly different and give us a message. And so they say, when you teach all who are hungry come and eat, you're referring to physical hunger. But when you say all who are needy come and share the Pesach, you're talking about spiritual hunger. And the reason that this is significant for us is because we are, of course, among the few human communities in the history of the world that need not worry whether we will have enough to eat. No one before the Industrial Age ever imagined such a thing because one was entirely dependent on the conditions of nature. And then after the Industrial Age, you had to be lucky enough to be in a community that was not ravaged by war or run by a manipulative tyrant. Nobody sitting down to the Passover Seder on Monday night will wonder, gee, will we have enough food? Will I eat too much? Yes. Will we have enough? No. But of course, will this experience move me? Will I come out of it, as Rabbi Sella said earlier, different than when I went in, with a greater sense of myself and of God? That we'll wonder about. And so I want to say something about the ways in which the Seder speaks to that hunger. We are all what the Zohar calls, the central book of Jewish mysticism calls, children from the chamber of yearnings. That's where our souls are forged. And as the Seder speaks to our physical hunger by feeding us, it should speak to our spiritual hunger. First, by teaching us to question. In our tradition, of course, the youngest person asks the questions, but do you know that according to the Talmud, the parent is supposed to ask the question? And the questions, even though they have become routinized over history, even though we ask the same questions, it is in order to stimulate genuine questions. In the Talmud, Abaye is a student of Rabbah's and is sitting at his Seder. And before the meal is served, Rabbah orders one of his waiters to take away the plates. And Abaye said, "Why did you take away the plates? The meal hasn't been served yet." And Rabbah said, "Ah, good, a question. Now we can dispense with the four questions and go right to the telling of the story." What do we learn from that? That the importance is not the content of the question. The importance is the spirit of questioning. That's why we do all these things, so that a child will say, "Why are you doing that?" At which point, the parent is supposed to smile and say, "I'm so glad you asked. Let me tell you why we're doing that. Turn the page, you'll find out." So first, before you fulfill the spirit, you wake it up. You bring it to life. It's what Rabbi Nachman of Bratslav said about his stories. He said, "Most people tell stories to put children to sleep. I tell stories to wake people up." There is another tool that we use in addition to questioning to wake up the spirit, and that is song. Nothing elevates the spirit like music. You can feel in the congregation when there is music, when people sing. That's the moment that we are together. If you walk into a traditional service, and even into our service or into our morning minyan, and people are reciting on their own, it's everybody individually, it's this cacophony of voices. One of my teachers, Rabbi Simon Greenberg of blessed memory, used to say that Jews pray alone together. But there is a moment when we come together, and that's when everyone is singing. And I hope for you at your Seder that you have people who sing, even if they don't know the words. Because questioning and singing, they will elevate the spirit and bring it to life. And then third, our spirit is awakened by the commitment to be who we are, to have a Seder. A Seder is another way of saying, this is the ground on which my identity stands. I am a Jew. Yes, yes, yes. That is the soundtrack of the Seder, right there. In fact, when you ask, why did the Jews become slaves in Egypt, one Midrash has a wonderful answer. It said, you know, Joseph started out beloved of the Pharaoh, and then all of a sudden a new Pharaoh comes up and he doesn't like the Jews. Why doesn't he like the Jews? One Midrash says, because the Jews started to become like the Egyptians. It wasn't the assertion of their identity, it was the denial of their identity that angered the Egyptians and estranged them. That's why Rambam, Maimonides, changes the traditional formula and says it's not lirot et atzmo, it's not to see yourself as though you are a slave, but laharot et atzmo, to show yourself that way. Because it doesn't matter how you see yourself if you are not willing to show yourself to the world. And the idea that you can have an identity in your heart and not in your life is a contradiction. So along with questions and song, there has to be pride. And pride is the brother of hope. Remember at the Seder, we opened the door for redemption. Because the greatest sin is despair. You're not allowed to open the newspaper and say, "I despair of the future of the world," unless your despair is momentary and your hope is eternal. The Seder is there to remind us that for hundreds of years, and we know now with the perspective of history for thousands of years, in different ways, in different climes, and different countries, our ancestors were oppressed. And here we are, sitting with a full meal, with family, with song. How dare we, of all people, give up hope? And I read you this beautiful passage from Rabbi Hugo Grin about what happened to him in the camps in 1944. At a certain point in winter, he says, "My father took me and some friends to a corner of the barracks and announced it was the eve of Hanukkah. He produced a small clay bowl and began to light a wick immersed in his precious but now melted margarine ration. Before he could recite the blessing, I protested at his waste of food. And he looked at me, and then at the lamp, and he said, 'My son, you and I have seen that it's possible to live up to 3 weeks without food. We once lived almost 3 days without water, but you cannot live properly for 3 minutes without hope.'" We open the door because for generations the Jews have fed on hope. And we who are lucky enough not to suffer physical hunger dare not leave our spiritual food behind. And then finally, the Seder gives us family and community. The Seder gives us each other. The Seder is the time of the year when we really ought not be alone. Even though it is an individual mission, kol adam chayav lirot et atzmo ki'ilu hu yatza mi'mitzrayim, every individual must see him or herself as going forth from Egypt. The Sfat Emet teaches us, how do you see yourself as an individual becoming free? By joining a community. It is counterintuitive, but it is true. An individual alone is a sliver, a piece. A community together can do anything. And that's why, at the beginning of the Seder, we hope for freedom. And at the end, having gone symbolically through this experience, we have grown, and although we are not redeemed, we are slightly freer because we are tied to one another. Because, after all, freedom is not the absence of constraints, but the presence of possibility. If you have no possibilities, if you have no connections, if you are without love, then you are not free. Min ha-metzar karati ya anani b'merchavya. The psalmist says, "I cried out to you from narrow spaces." Min ha-metzar. Do you hear the word Mitzrayim in that? Metzar, a narrow space. Anani b'merchavya. You answered me by expanding my world. We begin the Seder like this, and gradually, through questions, through music, through identity, through community, through family, the world opens up. That verse is in the Hallel. We recite it at the Seder. It is a beautiful verse. And I want to close with a beautiful passage that uses that verse as a leitmotif, as a musical refrain. It is from that extraordinary book, Man's Search for Meaning. Viktor Frankl writes as follows: "One day after liberation from the camps, I walked through the country past flowering meadows for miles and miles toward a market town near the camp. Larks rose to the sky and I could hear the birds' joyous song. There was no one to be seen for miles around, nothing but the wide earth and the sky and the lark's jubilation and the freedom of space. I stopped and looked around and up to the sky, and then I went down on my knees. At that moment, there was very little I knew of myself or of the world. I had but one sentence in mind, always the same. Minha meitza karati ya anani bamerchav ya. I called to the Lord from my narrow prison, and God answered me with the freedom of space. How long I knelt there and repeated this sentence, memory can no longer recall, but I know that on that day, at that hour, my new life started. Step for step, I progressed until I again became a human being." Then he turned his gifts to tying human beings together, one to another, and taught, as the Savior does, that we can create meaning in our lives through questions, through songs, through assertions, through family, through community, and through faith. Kol dichvin yetei v'yechu. All of us will be lucky enough to share the food of Pesach. Kol dichrich yesei v'yifsach. Those of us who are wise enough, courageous enough, determined enough, and blessed enough will share the spiritual food as well. And we will rise from the Passover table a little closer to what is best in our souls, more tied to those whom we love, more connected to our history and community, and Bezrat Hashem, with the help of God, closer to the source of all things, the creator of all life. Shabbat Shalom.